Skin in the Game is a story that was born from what my dad's experienced. So he was a professional rugby league player who really pursued the sport as a way of getting out of the situation he was in as a kid, growing up in Housing Commission in Western Sydney, which I think is quite a common story in rugby league as a working class sport, a really proudly working class sport. In his household growing up, unfortunately, there was domestic violence that put a lot of fear into him and his siblings and into his beautiful mum, my grandmother. And he tells the story in the documentary about how Nan gave him and his brother a footy and said, get on out of here. And that's where Dad fell in love with the game on the streets out in Mount Druitt. And he was able to provide a super privileged life to me and my sister. And I'd always wanted to tell that story. So that's what it started as. But such is the way with creating something so big like a documentary. It was influenced by what's been happening in Australian society more broadly over the last, well, couple of years, but a real explosion last year with the horrific epidemic of gendered violence and women dying at the hands of their partners. We know that rugby league sometimes has been associated with the problem when it comes to gendered violence, but I also know, because of what my dad has experienced and what I get to see as a rugby league reporter on the sidelines, is this game also has the great opportunity to do good and to create the change that we need to see. So trying to encapsulate that in an hour piece is pretty big, but I think what I hope people take out of it is this real hopeful message. We do live in a sporting nation, and this, you know, there's a lot of things we don't agree on in society, but one thing we seem to come together about is sport. So hopefully through this platform, we can listen to this conversation and see that each of us has a responsibility to do something about countering the negative attitudes, you know, that impact women and girls on a day-to-day basis. And I hope that Skin in the Game sort of achieves that by showing people that, you know, the next generation coming through who are growing up watching NRLW superstars, and also the men in the playing group who are open, honest and vulnerable about, you know, things that they've dealt with, that is kind of changing that idea of what it means to be a man in the sport. It's quite a hopeful message in the end. So it's that the future is looking bright.
It's a very complex topic. Told through the vehicle of rugby league. Has it made you sort of, I guess, reflect on your relationship with the sport, both the good and the negative as well? Can you tell me about that?
Yeah, my relationship with the sport, it's interesting. Through this whole process, I was reminded of being a teenager, and there was sort of a big spike in a lot of negative headlines related to the game. And I'd grown up as, my dad's nickname is Rocket, so I've always been Rocket's daughter, and been so closely tied to the game in my identity, and also just how people kind of knew who I was or knew who my family was. And I found myself rejecting the game at that point in time. I didn't want a part of it. I didn't think that there was a space for me as a woman, and I couldn't articulate it because I'm, you know, was just sort of I call myself a newborn feminist at that point, very just, you know, fly off the walls, not really understand things, but knew I felt uncomfortable with it. And it was through the NRLW that I was brought back to the game as a fan. And now I'm back in it wholeheartedly. I never thought I would be as a sports reporter, but here I am. And being here, I think I look at it from a different lens because of those experiences, because of how I grew up. And it's through my reignited passion and love for the game that I wanted to do this and sort of investigate that relationship. At times it was, you know, I found myself pushing back on some of the things that would come up because, you know, I used to get in arguments with people who would say, oh, rugby league's a negative, it's a bad game, it's a space where, you know, all these bad things happen, like we shouldn't role model those players. And I get quite angry because I go, well, I actually know these players quite intimately. I know what the community's like. I know how much it means to mob, and I would never want to take this away from people, because, you know, you look at everything from the Koori Knockout to All Stars to some of the biggest role models in the game, from your Latrell Mitchells to your Tamika Upton's. These are really important people, I think, to anyone who has anything to do with the game, but especially to mob. So I found myself really frustrated with that perspective, but also through the journey, realizing I know why people think that. I know what's been reported. I know what's been seen. So it's twofold. It's revealing that, like, at its core, this is not what this game is about at all. And it certainly can be better. It's tough for anyone to look at something that they love and try and have an objective perspective. I think if any of us are telling a story about our family, you know, no family's perfect. And I see rugby league as my family, as my community. So you go, oh, yeah, God, that wasn't good. And that's really difficult to sit with. But ultimately knowing that it can be better, I think, has certainly made me even prouder to be a part of rugby league.
How do you, throughout the documentary, approach coming to reckoning with this, and what's the process that you actually go through, you know, so people who are going to tune in can understand how you go through the journey?
Yeah, I guess the journey, it starts with my own personal experience working in the game, my dad's experience, and then we go out and speak to a whole bunch of people who come from different perspectives, whether it's an expert who works in domestic violence, who is actually helping women escape violent and scary situations, and he sort of reveals to us that domestic violence is unfortunately this horrific crime that doesn't discriminate. We speak to the experts in that space. We speak to former chair of the West Tigers, Marina Goh. There's no woman who's a chair of a rugby league club anymore, and she sort of speaks to the culture of working in the sport as in a public-facing role in that way that was really difficult for her. We also speak to an academic who tells this incredible story about the first ever women's rugby league game that was held in Sydney in 1921, and 20,000 people showed up. But unfortunately, the systems that be stopped that game from progressing until we got to the NRLW sort of format. And in between all of that, we speak with former players, current players in the men's playing group. And then the kind of pinnacle interview is with Peter Volandis, the chair of the Australian Rugby League Commission, sort of right at the end of the documentary. And I guess each of the conversations that I have bring a different perspective and very accurately sort of follow my own curiosity and consider all the contributing factors to addressing this really large issue that help sort of help me understand, and I hope the audience understand, you know, why rugby league when looking at this. Like, obviously for me it's quite a personal thing, but I think more broadly rugby league is a great case study because of the way that it is a microcosm for Australian society, and there are so many people from very different backgrounds who are a part of it. Then, you know, when we speak to an academic like Professor Michael Flood, he has the research there that shows the more that our women's game is spotlighted and there's that equality there, and the more that we have you know, men in the playing group like a Nico Hines who we speak to, who's open and vulnerable and kind of that anti-ultra masculinity, the better it is for everyone. But I guess it's kind of going from that, you know, really specific niche story of my family and my perspective to that macro level of what, you know, far smarter people than I say about this, even though I feel it on the ground that it's really good that our girls are kind of growing and growing and there's more young boys in the stadium and the like, and also people who work day to day in domestic violence services, that really gives a harrowing kind of picture of how dire the situation is and how urgent it is. I think that's something I really what grew inside of me through this whole process is that sense of urgency, especially as we were filming sort of this time last year, and by the time we got to April, I think it was 32 women had died at the hands of partners, and I found myself angry and kind of frustrated, I think, like a lot of people did. So the more that we got through, the more that I was like, yeah, this is a conversation we need to be having, and we need to be having it now.
I guess if you remove your personal connection from rugby league to the story, why would you say rugby league is the best vehicle for tackling this conversation as opposed to things like other sports, or maybe looking specifically at communities and regions in Australia or any other correlation between domestic violence? Why specifically do you think rugby league is the best vehicle for people to receive this information?
It's a really good question, because I tend to think that sport more broadly is probably a perfectly appropriate kind of answer to how do we look at this, because as I said, we're a sporting nation. I think what we saw with documentaries like The Final Quarter and The Australian Dream that focused on what Adam Goods went through is people were very receptive to that. You know, we find it's so difficult to have conversations about race and racism in this country because people get on the back foot and defensive and go, you know, are more upset about being called a racist than actual racism happening. But those documentaries worked so well because people who aren't a black fella identified with Goodsy because they care about AFL. And I think the only thing that creates true social change in this country is conversations we can have through sport, for better or for worse. I mean, I don't think it's really relevant if that's a particularly positive thing or not. It's just a fact. We can't agree on many things, on the Australian identity or so many other directions we're sort of heading. But one thing that seems to galvanise people is sport. You know, I'm not someone who, and I think a lot of people feel like this, I don't feel particularly comfortable ever feeling patriotic. There's so many problems I have with this country. But the second I see the Matildas on screen, I'm like, get me that green and gold, because I care about these girls, because look at what they've done. Like, I care about them as what they represent. So I think it's not necessary that it's through rugby league. I think the power of rugby league in this context, aside from my personal connection to it, is, you know, the slogan we've been using for years is, it's the greatest game of all. Peter Volandis corrected me and he said it's the greatest game for all. And I like that because I think, you know, Dad's a perfect example of this. So many of my friends who play the game are a perfect example of this. Kids who came from nothing, who didn't need all the resources in the world, sometimes played footy without proper footy boots, and Dad used to run to his games, like, because he didn't have people to drop him there. That still happens. It's amazing that a kid who can literally come from nothing can make it in this sport.
Without giving it too much away, because obviously we do want people to tune in, what sort of conclusions do you come to, I guess? Mm. What is the solution?
Yeah, I mean, there's no one solution, unfortunately. No magic potion that can fix something like this, as we know, with any big issue like this. But what I'm proud to say is that, you know, this is how I certainly felt, and the people who have seen it so far seem to feel the same, is that it's quite a hopeful message at the end. I feel we are often overwhelmed by such big issues where we don't feel like we can make a contribution as an individual. But the clear, tangible thing that comes out of it is supporting female athletes as a means for shifting cultural perspectives around how we treat women and girls. Professor Michael Flood, who's the academic we speak to, says the more that we see female athletes treated with the same respect and equality as their male counterparts in Australia, the more that people, it becomes, I think if the word he uses, it becomes increasingly unthinkable that there would be any sort of, you know, patriarchal discrimination against women and therefore violence against women. We meet someone like a Lavinia Gould, who's in her 40s and still playing in the NRLW, who works as a shift worker, providing for her two daughters and then going to footy training. And she says, I'd just love to be able to focus on footy a little bit more so I can, you know, live out my dream and not worry about injury and be able to provide for my kids. And, you know, the more that becomes less common occurrence, the more professional our women's game becomes. The Matildas are a great example of this as well. The more that our girls are there, the more that the next generation completely believes that a Tamika Upton is just as valuable as a Latrell Mitchell, the better it is. So that's the message that we get out of it. And I think equally so, people feel very hopeful about the direction we're heading with the men's playing group. Nico Hines is one of my best mates in the world, and I know how great he is, and I think people have seen how, you know, open and honest he's been about his journey. But there's so many Nicos in the game now who aren't afraid to say, hey, I've been struggling with this, or, you know, speak. In my podcast I have with the Nine Network too, I sit down with these players, and I think a lot of people are seeing this now too. They cry, they talk about how much their mum has sacrificed for them, they're not afraid to be perceived, you know, something different to this, like, ultra, I'm a manly man rugby league player. That's not what the game's about anymore. And it's still got a way to go, But I know that people will come out of this going, yeah, we're heading in the right direction and we need to support that direction.
Obviously, this is a personal story for you. How difficult did that get at times for you to sort of delve into things that you know that your family has experienced and I guess maybe being so vulnerable with the topic?
You know, there were some days that were extremely emotional, particularly where me and my dad were standing out the front of his childhood home, and the broader context at that time being that my nan wasn't very well and she passed away probably 6 weeks after we shot there. And it, you know, that was like quite an emotionally draining day. Also, because I think how often do we think about our parents as children? And Dad is sort of talking about that time and being scared. Like the thought of this young boy version of my dad being scared was really difficult. And I think he found it difficult too. But he has also said to me that it was more important to him to tell that story because he knows there's so many other people who've been through the same thing. That brought me a lot of strength. Working on something like this, you have these enormous days and you're so in it. And sometimes it's difficult because you kind of go, why am I doing this? And does this even make any sense? Is this going to be worth it? Thankfully, I was working with a production company that's led by women. They're the reason that this got off the ground, because I didn't even know that I could make a documentary. Thank goodness that they could sort of wrap themselves around me and support me the whole way through, and even have continual conversations with my dad and my family as we go through, and with all the people that we interviewed. That support and being able, because I think sometimes, a lot of the times with stories about mob, we're sort of expected to, or has have historically, you know, brought stories of trauma and of family to the forefront. It almost becomes like, you know, trauma porn, right? And then there's sort of like, that was a really great story, and there's no kind of care of what happens outside of that. But that's the power of working with someone like NITV and Southern Pictures, the production company that have helped me make this, is like there is that holistic perspective of when someone's telling a story that's very personal, that you look after them as, you know, not just as a storyteller but as a person.
And why was it important for you to tell a story as a woman? Because I think a lot of people might look at it and go, well, this is a man-driven problem. Mm. And it's, you know, why are men not coming up with the solution? Mm. But here you are as a strong, brave woman tackling it as a female. Mm. Why is that important? And I guess, what does that bring to the story itself?
Again, and I think you get some of this through Dad's stories. I was raised by, you know, a mum and dad who ensured there was never a question in my mind of what I could do as a woman, because of the long lineage on both sides of my family of strong women who've done brave things. I think that's sort of the family legacy, which is really cool. But to answer the question about what does a female perspective bring to this when it is, you know, something that's seen as a man's problem and what men have to do moving forward to solve it, is I think the prime example of this is the conversations I get to have in my podcast with the current playing group. That to me has really reiterated the importance of coming at storytelling from a feminist lens, in terms of it gives permission to men to be open and vulnerable in a way that I think we see this sort of emergence of men talking with men about, you know, it's okay not to be okay and mental health and the like, but there's still something else that comes from a woman's perspective with how they carry story or handle story. So, yeah, time and time again, I'm sitting down with some of the biggest players in our game, which is a great privilege. And they just seem to trust me. And I don't know if it's because the kinds of questions that I'm asking are different because I am a woman. You know, I get lots of questions around what it was like to come into sort of a male-dominated industry like rugby league, which I have to say I'm so lucky to have come in at the time that I have, because there have been a lot of women before me, and I am reaping the rewards of these women who have sacrificed a lot and faced a lot of stuff. So by the time I've gotten here, I have been so well supported by the men I work with, but also I'm coming into production rooms where it's majority women.
And in terms of the individual stakeholders within the NRL, what do you think the onus is on them at the end of this in terms of providing change.
Mm. The onus probably falls heaviest on the people who are in their day-to-day operations at every level of clubland. The women's game is the fastest growing component of rugby league in the country. More girls are signing up statistically than more boys are. It's the future of the game. It's about asking, where are the women in leadership? Again, we have no female chairs of a board of the NRL. From an administrative level, the impact of having female voices, diverse voices there, is so important.
What is your personal message to people who are thinking about watching the documentary?
Sitting down and watching Skin in the Game come Sunday night, that you can then take those conversations that it sparks in you and have them with the people around you. And also hold other people in positions of power in this game that we love, this greatest game for all, to account.